You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Rawinia Higgins is the Deputy Vice Chancellor Māori at Victoria University and the newly appointed Chair of Te Tauriwhiri I Te Reo Māori, the Māori Language Commission. I spoke to her about the state of the Māori language in the country and the role of the Commission in 2018. I first asked how she was feeling about her new role.
I'm excited about the opportunity to be the chair of the commission and working alongside the board and the office to be able to give effect to the Māori language legislation.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's exciting.
Cool.
Overwhelming a little bit, but
yeah,
but still early days. So,
what is the role of Te Tauriwhiri I Te Reo Māori in 2018 and onwards? What are you hoping is achieved?
So in the new legislation, it clearly articulates the role and function of Te Tauriwhiri, and that being to lead the coordination of the Mahi Krona, or the Crown's Māori Language Strategies. That's still, as I understand, in draft form. So we anxiously wait the release of the Mahi Krona to be able to see how we'll be able to give effect to objectives that are outlined on that strategy.
And you worked on that strategy, didn't you?
Not on this specifically. I've had, through my previous role on the Te Mātāwai board, I suppose maybe just to take a step back, the new legislation is taking a new approach to Māori language revitalisation, in that it takes into account the role of Māori in Māori language revitalisation, and in this case that's governed by Te Mātāwai, and the creation of two strategies, one for Māori that focuses on micro-language planning. So Te Mātāwai, specifically their goal or vision is Kia U Kai Puano Te Reo Māori, reinvesting in the creation of intergenerational language transmission amongst families.
Mm.
And the Crown's vision is Kia Mā Hora Hora Te Reo, which is to ensure that the language is easily accessible and visible everywhere in the country, so taking a more macro language planning approach.
I've noticed, at least here in Auckland, huge interest around enrolment in te reo courses. Obviously this is really positive, with people from many backgrounds interested in engaging with the language, but I have also heard conversations around people finding it difficult to access courses because of so much interest and some frustration and questioning around who should be entitled. There are also worries voiced around what it means to have a surge of te reo speakers who are not necessarily from a Māori background. I myself feel like a lot of whakamā and guilt when my knowledge is not to the level of someone else's. What do you think about these kind of conversations, and what does it mean for rangatiratanga of Māori culture and knowledge?
Okay, so let me try and take you back to the first question. I think that there is definitely a positive attitude towards the language in more recent times. And I think demand for language courses has certainly increased, and it has become a little bit difficult to access those courses, which again is a positive demand. I think the issues around entitlement to the language does challenge people from a rangatiratanga perspective.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think one of the things, particularly the research that myself and my colleague have done around understanding the value of te reo Māori. Te reo is one of those interesting languages that, unlike many other languages, it comes with a lot of layers of value.
Mm.
And in those layers of value, we can be positive or negative depending on which layer or filter we're putting through, whether intrinsic, so tied to our identity, all the way through to social, cultural, political, economic, educational, intellectual values that people place, and noticing a positive or negative reaction depending on which of those values you're applying at any one time. One of the things that, as a country, we are monolingual in attitude and behaviour, so we live in this kind of tension with the language. Intrinsically, it's tied to identity, and we have lots of aphorisms and sayings around he taonga te reo, my language is a treasure, reo rangatira, it's a chiefly language, and we talk about it being integral to our identity, but we still don't speak the language.
Yeah.
we're not using the language enough to kind of ensure that use is quite key. And then we shift along the kind of trajectory of positive through to negative, depending again on whether we see any benefit in it. So if we look at the educational value, the numbers of kōhanga reo are quite large, but then as you go through the education system, the numbers in full immersion schools starts to dwindle, and then high schools the same. So whilst we have over 400 kōhanga reo, there was a time at its peak where there was over 800, and kura kaupapa and whare kura, there's about 72. So it's not like there's a huge spike in our pipeline of language growth amongst our own people. So I get the tension that we live in. My colleague and I, we used to call it, we have the Gollum effect with our language, where we talk about he taonga te reo, it's my precious, and we want to hold on to it and not let other people have the language or be entitled to the language more than others. But if we look at it from a youth perspective, part of getting other people to use the language helps to prompt others to see, oh, there is some value in this language and I might be more inclined to want to learn and want to speak. Because language trauma, for example, is a real thing.
Yeah.
So we inherit language trauma, even if we've never actually experienced it ourselves. And so our parents or grandparents who have had negative experiences that can transfer down generations. Mm. So I think in this new language landscape is around trying to turn that around and trying to make it more positive. By kind of focusing on how do you restore language in homes through the work of Te Mātāwai, but also how does the language get positioned in society as being of value?
And I think that, yeah, on the other side of things, there is that the questioning of value and validity and normality. And one of my favourite academic conversations that I've been exposed to this year is from Linda Tuhiwai-Smith, where she says Māori identity, language and values are normal and valid, so you're not going to approach things in a way which questions the normality or validity. Unfortunately, I feel recently, at least in the mainstream media, so much of the conversation has been whether te reo is valuable or valid. How do we respond to conversations like this, and how do we move beyond this discussion?
I think one of the things that, you know, in terms of understanding the value of the language across the board, so from that big societal level, is te reo is everywhere. So you cannot avoid te reo Māori in this country. Place names are a defining feature of our country, and reminding people that it is this nation's first language. In that space is that positioning of where people come from, more likely than not, has a Māori name or has a whakapapa that connects them to that place. Whether that is actual genealogy in terms of Māori genealogy or whether they're successive generations of non-Māori who have been in that space, there's more than likely that they are coming across or connected to some form of te reo. Equally, you know, the defining feature at a global level of this country always falls to te reo, whether it's through the haka or through the national anthem, if it's sung properly. But, you know, there was a time not so long ago where generations of New Zealand children today will not realise that the national anthem itself was only ever in English, you know, because we normalise it. And the more we start normalising the language, the more people see that it's very much part of their identity as New Zealanders. For Māori themselves, you know, we will always have that intrinsic connection to the language because it's tied up in how we describe ourselves, whether it's through our pepeha, like your pepeha when you identified who you were for me, so I can automatically make a connection to this is where Jen is from. She's from Rotorua and she's from up north.
Yeah.
Without even having to ask the specifics. For me, that's enough to connect me to you. And have an appreciation of your background without you having to say too many words. So in terms of language revitalisation, how do we take the kind of positive attitudes around identity markers, instill them in our own tamariki and mokopuna for future generations, that it becomes the norm for them, that the struggle for them is no longer the same struggle that it was 30 years ago. And I think we've moved past that. So if I think about pioneers like Linda Tui Waismuth, who was at the forefront of ensuring that our tamariki had access to language through kōanga reo and kura kaupapa when they were denied language themselves, now we need to see what can we do to shift the dial a little bit further in this new space, knowing that we have kōanga, we have kura kaupapa, we have wharekura, wānana. How do we continue to shift the dial so we become more bilingual and open to bilingual conversations and understanding what bilingualism actually means?
Where do you currently see real successes in Aotearoa, and what do you think are the most exciting things to come?
I think being able to work in a new policy landscape is exciting. Within the 2 years of working with Te Mātāwai, one of the things that I'm really heartened by is that ability for regions to be more self-determining rather than taking a very blanket approach to language revitalisation. I think there have been some pioneers in tribal language revitalisation who have been in this for a lot longer, and people can see the results of new generations of first language speakers. So there's clearly some models there for others who might be further along the trajectory that we can learn from. And also redefining what is the role of Māori, but also what is the role of the Crown to be able to support at a societal level the importance of te reo Māori, not just for Māori, but also for the nation as a whole.
95BFM Podcasts. 95BFM is supported by our listeners. Sign up for a Simplicity B-card at 95bfm.com/signup and support independent media from $4.20 a month.